Let's close the eyes, sit up straight, comfortable, relaxed. Let's recite Om 3 times. Inhale. Invocation to sage Patanjali, and it has a little tune to it, so I will sing it. In the meantime, you can either listen to the tune, or listen to the invocation, or read it on the screen here. Okay. Inhale. Yogena chittasya padena vacham Malam sharirasya cha vaidyakena yopakarotam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi. Karen, you can read the meaning loud.
I was just reading the volume.
Can you read it aloud?
Read it aloud? Oh, sure. I respectfully bow down with folded hands and offer my salutations to Sage Patanjali, highest among the munis, who has presented the remedies for removing the impurities of the body through his treatises on Ayurveda, of language through his treatises on grammar, and the impurities of the chitta through his treatises on yoga.
Very good. He gave us three ways to remove the impurities of the body, mind, and the speech.
Okay.
So his grammar is one of the most popular commentaries on the ancient grammar by Panini, and his Ayurveda, the ancient science of medicine. And of course, yoga, we know, he is the originator of the yoga philosophy. So, now, you haven't been here before, right? Sangeeta, yeah. So, we've been studying the yoga sutras, and what we do is, we go through these sutras one by one, and then study the Sanskrit, and then we translate the Sanskrit into English one word at a time, and then try to understand the whole sentence and see how it goes. What are the sutras? Sutras is a collection of 195 statements which define and describe yoga. What is yoga? What is the definition of yoga? What are the objectives of yoga? What are the pitfalls on the way to practicing yoga, and what are some of the obstacles in the practice of yoga, etc., etc. All these things, and eventually, all the concepts of yoga is clarified. So that's what the Yoga Sutras are all about. And in the practice of the Yoga Sutras, again, the main one of the main practices that he recommends is the practice of the eight limbs of yoga. They are called the Ashtanga Yoga, eight limbs of yoga. And that's what we are focusing on right now. Okay? So we started with the first limb of yoga, which is the Yamas and Niyamas. Well, let me just quickly, this is something that we have done in the last two sessions. So I'm going to just very, very quickly review these very quickly. I'm not going to spend time because we have revised it twice now. And so what this says is that by the practice of the limbs of yoga, all the impurities of the mind are diminished or demolished. And then we can get to the ultimate goal of yoga, which is self-realization. So that's this statement. It's a very beautiful statement. We went through this in detail last time. Okay. Then these are the eight limbs of yoga. Again, just to repeat these eight limbs of yoga, they are yama. Everyone repeat after me. Yamas, niyamas, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. So these are the eight limbs of yoga. And what are these eight limbs? That's what we are talking about. Yamas and niyamas are ethical and ethical and moral guidelines. And they are, the yamas are for how to interact with other people, and niyamas are for self-disciplining, yourself, how to apply these guidelines to yourself, not as interactive guidelines. So those are the yamas and niyamas. Asanas are the physical postures, original meaning was sitting posture, but then evolved to mean all the other postures also. But pranayama is the breath, breathing control, how to maneuver your breathing in multiple ways so you can derive a lot of benefits. That's the pranayama. And then pratyahara is what? Withdrawing means you are disengaging the mind from any influence through the five senses, disconnecting the two together. So essentially the senses are also turned inwards toward the mind rather than outward projection. And then what is...
I did have a question about this. So in asanas, we have the practice, physical practice, pranayama, the breath control, dharana, we can focus. But in pratyahara, are there any practices...
Well, yoga nidra, for example.
Oh.
Yoga nidra, the deep relaxation, that's pratyahara.
I got you.
And there are some practices which are a combination of pratyahara and dharana. They combine the two. For example, if you practice the candle gazing practice, right? You stay with that candle gaze for a long enough time, that becomes pratyahara. Because then all you're doing is you're only focusing on your visual aspect. Every other sense is withdrawn. And after that, when you close the eyes and focus on the inner gaze, then your mind is cut off from all the outside world then. Okay. That's a form of pratyahara, and it immediately goes into dharana practice. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of pratyahara and dharana. Okay? And listening to any sound, for example, people say music, for example, that gets you into a state of pratyahara.
So it's almost as if you're not distracted by anything coming through any of the senses
sight, right?
Sound,
eventually.
Yeah.
It's like if you're listening to some soulful music, if you listen to her music, for example, then, you can get so deeply engrossed in that everything else is cut off,
exactly,
except that music. Okay? But then when that music stops, then even sound doesn't bother you because you're so immersed in that whole experience as a meditative experience. Then it becomes combination of pratyahara and dharana. Okay? Then, like I said, dharana is the initial focus. And these are some of the techniques that I already mentioned. Candle gazing is a very good technique for bringing the mind to an initial focus. Listening to music is one of them. Chanting some mantras loud, that's another technique of getting into dharana. Even chanting om loud for 10 minutes, that gets you to a very deep state of dharana. It's actually it's one of the breathing techniques, chanting Om. It's a pranayama technique called Udgita Pranayama. You just chant Om loud for a long enough time, 7, 8, 10 minutes, and very beautiful. That's dharana, the initial focus. Then dhyana is to get the mind into a single point of focus for a longer period of time. Okay, so the same thought, same content of the mind should flow through the mind. And we'll get into the great deeper definitions of all this. I'm just giving you a very broad kind of an overview, because we're going to go through these in detail, one by one. Okay? And samadhi is the final absorption. Okay. Now, these are the five yamas. So again, just for a refresher, let's go through these. Five yamas are ahimsa, repeat, ahimsa, satya, asteya, brahmacharya, aparigraha. Okay, ahimsa is non-violence, satya is truthfulness, okay, asteya is not stealing anything, brahmacharya is celibacy, you can call it, continence, celibacy, and aparigraha is not hoarding, non-greed, etc. So those are the five yamas, and so far we have been discussing only the yamas, and we have discussed ahimsa and satya. So today when we start the whole thing, we will go through the third of the yamas. But again, let's just a quick review. These are the five niyamas. Again, the niyamas are shaucha, santosha, tapas, swadhyaya, ishvara pranidhana. Okay, those are the five. So what is shaucha? Purity, cleanliness. Okay, that's shaucha. And santosha is contentment, not being unhappy about things which are beyond your control, basically. And tapas is austerities. You know, tapas is to actually put yourself through some controlled toughness, some controlled difficult situation, so that you can become tougher mentally or physically.
I've seen it translated as discipline, but that's not close, is it? Tapas and discipline.
Discipline is a little more softer version of tapas. Tapas is stronger. You know, tapas is stronger. Tapas is you kind of make a vow or something, take a vow to do something and then go through with that, you know, with
more like intention.
Right? Intention, yes. Mm-hmm.
You would make the vow something difficult to
do? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Something out of the ordinary, something that is not your comfort zone on a daily basis. So something like, you know, these days everyone talks about, you know, fasting, right? So you have to have not just food fasting. They're talking of TV fasting, phone fasting, email fasting, WhatsApp fasting, you know. Those are the kind of things that you want to really focus on and then develop that toughness. Can I stay off my email for 6 hours or a whole day? Can I stay off of TV for a whole day or a whole week? Okay. If morning coffee is my comfort zone, can I stay off that coffee for a whole week? That's tapas. Okay. Or sleeping until 7 o'clock is my comfort zone. Can I wake up at 6 and spend that 1 hour for yoga practice? That's tapas. And then tapas, and then what is what does swadhyaya mean?
Study of the scriptures, study of self.
Study of self, and through, what they claim is that through the understanding and study of scriptures, you have a better idea of what to look for in your own self. Because scriptures contain the truth, so we can get to understand that truth, ultimate truth, and then apply it to yourself, to study yourself. That's swadhyaya. And Ishvara Pranidhana. What's Ishvara Pranidhana?
Worship of God.
Worship of God, surrender to God. It's a total surrender to some higher being, so to say, you know, something which is higher than us, okay, more permanent than us, in fact, very permanent, eternal, something that never changes. And that's what? That's God. That's the Supreme Consciousness. So those are the five niyamas. And then we talked about ahimsa, which is non-violence. And again, we said very briefly that violence can be done through physical means, through speech, and through the mind. So you want to understand all those three modes of inflicting violence on others as well as yourself. We do that on ourselves also. In fact, violence inflicted on ourselves is much more dangerous in many, many ways, and it's more harmful, and the negative effects are much longer lasting than violence inflicted on others sometimes. So it's understanding all these concepts of what violence means and how to curb the urge to inflict violence. So that's the ahimsa. And then satya is
non-stealing,
not claiming things that do not belong to you, etc., etc. We know that, but once you get into the concept of asteya, then you understand, start realizing that we steal not just physical property, but we steal everything. We steal time, we steal ideas, we steal thoughts, we steal emotions, we steal relationships, you know, space, encroach upon others' space and steal that space, and you know, all kinds of things. So you really have to get into the depth of these concepts to understand the broad spectrum of things that go into in this non-stealing thing. Okay? All right? What did we talk about?
When? You mean last time? Or last time?
No. Last time we finished satya, right?
Yeah.
Ahimsa and satya.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's what So we want to go into asteya. That's what I started talking already without putting the preface. Okay. So stealing, non-stealing is what we're talking about now, asteya. So let's first of all do this, the sutra. Okay, Sanskrit first. Okay, so asteya, so repeat after me, asteya.
Asteya.
Pratishthayam.
Sarvaratna.
Upasthanam. So the whole, if I read it all in one go, asteya pratishthayam.
Sarvaratnopasthanam.
Right. Asteya is non-stealing. Pratishthayam, for one who is established in the value of non-stealing. Pratishtha is to be established. Pratishthayam in the one, to the one who has full control over his, who is fully in charge of his asteya concept. Sarvaratno. Now, ratna is gems, jewels, all the jewels that you can think of. Sarvaratna upasthanam, they present themselves. For someone who is totally deep into non-stealing, all kinds of jewels and gems will present themselves to in his presence. What does that mean now?
Is that a metaphorical statement? Is that more metaphorical than...
It's obviously.
Armor car doesn't show up full of gold.
No. So... And the guy who is totally contented with everything, the guy who has no desire for stealing, he has no desire for gaining anything, he doesn't need any real jewels or anything. What that means is that he will be given all amenities of life, basically. I mean, I'm assuming that's what he meant. That he will not feel the lack of anything in life. That whatever he has completely given up all thoughts of stealing anything. Like I said, stealing could be at the subtlest level of multiple things that you can be thinking of stealing. thoughts, you can steal ideas, you can steal concepts. People steal, you know, in the research, people steal research papers, you know, authorship. You write an article and then your boss takes away the honor and starts writing his own name on it. That happens all the time, right? And you steal space, you steal lots of them. I mean, you can think of many, many things that people steal at a very subtle level. Now, if you have given up every one of those ideas in your mind, you are completely free of any desire to steal anything, then you don't need much. That means you are happy. So if you need something, it will come to you. That's what it is, basically. So, all ratna. Ratna is all the jewels. This translation of wealth is much more than wealth. Ratna means all the jewels, gems and jewels. The precious stones. Well, I've given some of my own ideas and you can look at these. Greed and desire cause stealing, taking something not belonging to you forcefully, deceitfully, unjustly, illegally. And you can add a few more concepts there. And greed and desire, we know that greed and desire, you know, those are the key guidelines for anything negative that happens to us. Greed and desire. Arriving late for a meeting, that, like I said, you can steal time. You're stealing somebody else's time. Okay. Making demands in a relationship is stealing. Again, through practice of asteya, all treasures will be at your disposal. That's the sutra we just read. Okay. Now, the next one is, that was stealing, non-stealing, asteya. Next one is brahmacharya. Again, so the sutra is, brahmacharya pratishthayam, Virya labhaha.
Virya labhaha.
So brahmacharya pratishthayam virya labhaha.
Brahmacharya pratishthayam virya.
Pratishthayam, same thing. One who is established in brahmacharya, fully, deeply engrossed in that concept, who has won over the distractions from brahmacharya. Virya labha. Virya is the Sanskrit word for vigor, valor, enthusiasm, energy, and all those positive energy qualities, that's virya. Okay. In fact, the term for male semen is also virya. That's also called virya. That's also associated with vigor and vitality and all that. Okay. Now, what is brahmacharya? See, brahmacharya is the literal meaning of brahmacharya. Brahma means supreme consciousness. And charya means to stay in something. So charya means to live in something, to walk in something. Char is to walk or move or live or stay there, etc. So brahmacharya means to establish yourself in the concept of pure consciousness. That means you are beyond the senses, basically. You have conquered the five senses, and that's the only way you can get into the pure consciousness state. But in the common parlance, you can say, in the common usage of the word brahmacharya, brahmacharya means, for the most part, sexual control. Okay? In India, you know, the common term used for a person who is not married, is brahmachari. Of course, the idea was in those days was that you get into sex only after marriage, unlike these days. Okay? So a person who was not married was called a brahmachari. And these yogis who go into training in the ashrams to become sannyasis, You go into an ashram and you want to eventually become a sannyasi, but then you have to go through a period of training. And their training could last 10 to 12 years in many cases. While they are in training, they are called brahmacharis. Because at that time, they are supposed to be totally, they're staying completely free of any contact with the opposite sex. And that was the idea. And in those days, they would have separate sections for boys and separate for girls. Not just section. The whole school would be just the boys' school, or the whole school would be just the girls' school in the old days. Okay? This concept of mixed classes, mixed sex classes, in India it's reasonably recent, no more than 40 years, maybe.
I actually studied in an all-girls school, so until I went to college.
Right.
Yeah.
That means it was still popular for it.
Yeah, I went to a Ramakrishna Math school.
Yeah.
So it was all girls' school.
Yeah.
So for me, going to college, the first year was like, it was hard to understand,
Mixed sex.
Yes.
It's very hard to adapt to that whole situation, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I was in a school which was all boys' school for multiple years. No girls. Yeah. I think all the way up to high school. Same thing. We never saw a girl in our school until high school. But now most schools are mixed schools in India. But some of these ashrams, they still maintain separation. And, there are several ashrams even here. For example, if you go to this temple called the Satyanarayan Temple, Swami Satyanarayan Temple. Whenever they have their gatherings, men's section is on one side, women's section on the other. They never mix. They don't. Even today. Okay, so anyway, brahmacharya, like I said, it's a very broad term. Most common meaning is sexual control. Abstinence, so to say. Okay. And this was taken to extremes by a lot of people, There are so many stories in our culture. And the most recent, of course, was this freedom fighter by the name Mahatma Gandhi. Anybody heard that name? Gandhi. Okay. He took it to the extreme. And even though he was married, he said he will never have sex with his wife after he took the vow to become a celibate. And he continued that, for the rest of his life. And then, of course, there is this famous story in Mahabharata. You all remember that Bhishma. He took the vow of celibacy. There's a big story around that. And he became the most powerful person in that whole scenario. In fact, because of his that strict vow and in his sticking to his vow, he became so powerful that he was given the boon that he could choose his own time of death. That he could choose when he decided to die. You remember that? Yeah. But those are the powers you can get as a result of this this brahmacharya. Okay, so it's very powerful. Okay, celibacy is controlling the sense organs. Refrain from the 8 forms of sexual indulgence. In the commentary, they talk about, you know, these eight forms of sexual indulgence, thinking of, talking about, joking about, looking intently with a desire, secret talk, a resolve or an attempt, endeavor, and consummation of the sexual act itself. You know, all these are supposed to be avoided. A brahmachari should have frugal diet and moderate sleep, avoid craving for sensual enjoyments, sublimate and redirect sexual energy to achieve inner strength. Some of the things that are mentioned in our texts. There are a lot of people have written a lot of stuff on brahmacharya. You know, there's volumes and volumes people have written. And one established in celibacy attains virya or indomitable courage and vigor. And also what Vyasa in his commentary says, that one who is established in brahmacharya can transmit knowledge of self to his disciples. And disciples become more receptive in that sense because of his own courage and bravery, so to say. Okay, so that's brahmacharya. Then the next one is aparigraha. So let's read the sentence here. Aparigraha sthairye janma kathanta sambodhaha. So it is aparigraha sthairye janma kathanta sambodhaha. That's right. So, sthairya means one who is established. Again, sthira. Sthira means to be firm in something. Okay? So, sthairya means one who is very firm in something. And that something here is aparigraha, non-greediness. Aparigraha means non-greediness, or not having the desire to hoard. H-O-A-R-D, hoard. Okay, so not having a desire to hoard or having completely given up any touch of greediness. Once you are fully established in that, then you can get janma kathamta. Kathamta means how, the literal meaning of kathamta would be howness, whatever that means. Howness. Howness.
That's what I thought you
meant. Okay. Janma kathamta means howness. Of janma, life and death. Where did you come from? Where are you going after this life? You get to know all that. Once you become totally established in non-greediness. Now, you know, Patanjali wrote all this. Of course, he never gave any commentary. So commentary was written by other people. So they are banging their head, you know, you know, what does it mean, and how can you get to know your life, or the beginning of the life, or the origin of life, and what happens after the life, just by becoming non-greedy? Okay. So you can pick your own interpretation. Many people have given their own thoughts. Basically, what they're saying is that, again, like everything else, greediness causes all the samskaras in the mind. And by become completely non-greedy, there's a better chance that you can read through your samskaras, past samskaras. You become much more familiar with your samskaras.
These are the past impressions.
Everything that you have in your mind, all the stuff that we have in the mind, that samskara. Okay? So once you become familiar with your samskaras, then samskaras are the impressions from not only this life, but the past life also. You can read into your past life, or you can read how you grew into this life. And then all that can be projected into future, and you can project your future life also. Something like that, you know. So it's
the pages of Esther years.
Yes.
That we write, so they'll only go... they'll take alms for that day or for that week. The rishis and munis, bhikshus that we used to. So they'll only go and take, if they are hungry, only for that
meal.
Yeah. That's it. That is only if they are hungry, not otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So they never hoarded anything. That's why the self-realization was more and more possible.
Possible, yeah, absolutely. Yes. Okay. Yep.
Janma Katha was available to them.
That's right. That's right.
The commentators on Patanjali, were they students of his, or were they separated from him?
Well, no, we don't know. The most authoritative and the most trusted, most respected commentary is by Vyasa. Okay, now, who was Vyasa and what was his relationship to Patanjali? Nobody knows for a fact. Most people believe that he was his contemporary in terms of time frame. But then there are some who believe, you know, he came at least a couple of hundred years after Patanjali. Okay. And his commentary is the most authoritative. Everyone who wants to understand Patanjali, he has to go through his commentary first. Okay. But then, of course, there are later commentaries by Vachaspati Mishra and Vigyan Bhikshu, and there are a few others who are also considered fairly authoritative. But obviously nothing compared to, because they also commented only on Vyasa. Okay, all these people, like most of them are, you know, like most common names that we hear are, and you can see the same names in Bryant, Vachaspati Mishra, Bhojraj, and you know, Vigyan Bhikshu.
Harihari.
Hari is much later. Aranya is only last century. Okay. Aranya is much, much later.
No, Hariharananda.
Yeah.
Is that the same thing as Aranya?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Hariharananda Aranya, that's the full name. Okay. He's only last century.
Bhojraja has written or commentary?
Bhojraj, yeah. On the Yoga Sutra, right. It's quite well known.
I didn't know. I'm dumb or ignorant.
No. There are so many people who have written, but these are the most commonly referenced commentaries.
Okay. I just know Bhojraja is a patron of Sanskrit and all of that, but I didn't know that he himself has.
I don't know the historical person, but I just know that name very well because his commentary is always referenced.
Okay. Are there any modern commentators?
Of course,
Bryant.
Sachidananda, Bryant, they're all modern commentators.
Well, Bryant seems to be referring to the ancient.
Yeah, of course,
Rather than his own interpretation.
Yes, that's right.
I was thinking more of a commentary of the sutra in terms of 21st century life.
Yeah. Right. Aranya is more recent. Aranya is very recent. He is less than 100 years old. And His commentary is pretty.
Did I hear that some people think Vyasa may have been Patanjali himself?
I've read that too. Hmm. Or at least a reincarnation of Patanjali or something like that. But all kinds of thoughts.
How is Vyasa spelled?
V-Y-S-A-S-A.
Did it right? Okay.
V-Y.
I spelled it right, guessing. So.
A-S-A, Vyasa, yeah.
At what point were these written down?
The writing probably happened very recently, you know, after the printing press came into existence. Yeah. That's when the real writing started. Before that, there were apparently some manuscripts handwritten. But in the ancient times, there was nothing handwritten because there was nothing, no instruments to write on. And therefore, you know, there are stories like, you know, when Patanjali was dictating it to somebody and he wrote it down, and then he wrote it on these very wide banana leaves or something. And then, or some leaves, you know, some tree leaves, palm leaves, yeah. And then while these people were sleeping, both these the scribe and Patanjali were sleeping at night, one goat came and ate up the whole thing. And then eventually that goat had to be reborn to dump the whole thing out, otherwise it would have been lost. All kinds of stories. So who knows Vyasa? Vyasa, who knows that Vyasa was born out of that goat? You know. You know, we don't know. Yeah. All kinds of stories are there. Okay, so that's aparigraha. Aparigraha is literally just to give up all greed and all desire to hoard things beyond what you need. And like Mahi said, you know, these ancient or even these current yogis, when they give up their possessions, they become sannyasis. They're supposed to have nothing, no possession of their own whatsoever, zero. They don't go and bring food into their house. They go from house to house to beg for food. That's their life. They have to get food from somebody else. Once they get the food, they will only get as much as their body would need at that time. They would never carry anything back home, never. Because at home, they don't want to have anything.
Does that still occur today in India?
There are some people who do that, yes. Yes. Of course, many people cheat, but...
Because I don't know. But that's the idea.
Yeah, that's the idea, yes. Because when they take sannyas, you know, it's supposed to be a second life. They're supposed to have buried their ego altogether. So it's they die and then they are reborn as sannyasis. Okay. So, strictly speaking, one of you can read these in loud so we can... Dave, you want to read them?
Read them all?
Yeah.
Strictly speaking, no possessions besides what is needed for bare sustenance.
Yeah, and we'll stop, pause for a moment and see if you have any doubts. Anybody have doubts or questions? That's exactly what we talked about right now. Okay.
Time and energy spent in accumulation and guarding possessions.
So, you know, I always like to relate that story that when I used to live in New Jersey before I moved here, and I was a tennis player, I mean, in the sense that I used to play tennis every morning. I was a part of the club. And in New Jersey, it used to snow a lot, right? So even in snow, we would go and play. We'd park the car as close to the front entrance of the club so that we don't have to walk too much in the snow and then go there. One of our friends who bought a Mercedes car, Mercedes-Benz car, he would park at the very last parking lot. Very last parking lot so that nobody could touch his car. And in a foot and a half of snow, he would walk all the way from the last spot to the tennis club. Then suddenly one time we found that he is missing for a whole week. He hasn't shown. He was one of the more regular players, so he hasn't shown for a whole week. And after a week, I called him up. I said, "Hey, Jim, what's going on?" He said, "You won't believe it." He says, "My car was totaled in an accident." Oh. And he was so protective of his car. And he was completely broken. I mean, he just devastated. And he didn't even go to work for a whole week just because his car was totaled. And he was so much in love with his car. So, you know, that's the level of attachment and energy and time and all that emotion spent in accumulation and guarding possessions. He would guard it to you know, with his life. And yet, guess what happened? Same thing happens, you know, we had, in our house, we had an alarm, like a, what is it called?
Security
alarm system. And one day we were out of the house. We had gone visiting some, and then the alarm went off. Police came and everybody, and they called us. We came over and said, "What's happening?" Then we opened the door. Nothing, zero. It just went off by itself. And that can happen. And, you know, I I disconnected the whole thing, threw it out completely. I said, I don't want this mess. So again, all these alarm systems and all that, now I find how useless they are, completely useless. There's absolutely no need. Okay. And fear is a concept in the mind. It has no reality. It's just a concept in the mind. Okay? So since you mentioned fear, it's nothing but a concept in the mind. It has absolutely no real existence. And it's useless. Fear is an enemy. Okay, constant fear of losing, causing mental anguish, loss of possessions, causing intense pain. So that's what I just mentioned, right? That always happens. So when you are in the concept of aparigraha or non-greediness, then you can remove fear and hate and disappointment. That means you're not attached to anything that you possess or you want to possess. It doesn't mean you don't aspire for things. You know, that I always like to add my own two cents here. Don't think that because you don't want to get attached to anything or you don't want to possess anything, you don't want to aspire. You want to aspire. But aspiration only to the point that if nothing is gained as a result of your endeavor, don't get disappointed. It's okay. Take it just exactly as it comes. Okay? So acceptance becomes very important in that. Acceptance as opposed to fear. Okay? And aspiration as opposed to greediness. Okay? So when stabilized in aparigraha, one obtains full knowledge of past and future lives. That's a very difficult one to explain, and commentators are having a hard time explaining that. So if you read five or seven different commentaries, you will get a different viewpoint. Any other thoughts on this one? Everyone okay? Mm-hmm. This is another tough one. Shauchat. Swanga jugupsa. Paraihri asang sargah. Again, let me read that again. I'm going to break that. These are all joint words in Sanskrit. So they all separate out. Paraihi asansargah. Right. So shauchat swanga jugupsa. Paraira sansargaha. Okay, let's get to the meanings of each word now. Shauchat, that means from the practice of shaucha or cleanliness, that's shauchat. That means from the practice of, or from the establishment in. Swanga, anga means bodies or limbs of the body. Swanga means your own body. Your own body, your own limbs of the body. Your own body basically. Now, jugupsa. Jugupsa means if I were to just give you the meaning, it's a deep sense of hatred. Deep sense of hatred.
Just disgust, aversion.
What does it say? Disgust.
Disgust.
Yeah.
Aversion.
It's even stronger than that. It's a very deep sense of dislike for something. You know, you just cannot stand something. So he says, once you become established in purity and in cleanliness, you develop a deep sense of dislike for your own body.
That one's tough.
That's a tough one, right?
Yeah.
And then, paraihi. Paraihi means the others. Paraihi means others. Asamsarga, sansagara means is contact. Asamsarga means zero contact.
That's the commentary I was reading in Bryant when I realized that's asceticism right there.
Yes. Absolutely. That's pure asceticism then. Then you become totally an ascetic and you have no desire to have contact with yourself or to anybody else. stuff. It's very, very difficult. You know, when I started reading all this, my first thought was, look, this body is supposed to be a temple. How can you develop dislike for this body? It's the only temple through which you can reach liberation. This is the only vehicle we have through which we can reach liberation. If we don't have this body, we don't have the mind, we don't have the intellect, we don't know how to get past that, all that. So why do we develop jugupsa for our own body? That was a very difficult concept for me to grasp on. But then you start reading commentaries, and what they're telling us is that, look, this body, from outside it may be, you know, clean or whatever. What's inside the body? It's all filth. Whatever comes out of the body is full of filth. It's full of bad odor. It's something you don't want to touch, you don't want to taste, you don't want to even go near it. Whatever comes out of the body, no matter what it is. So besides this outer skin, everything else is full of it.
We are pretty disgusted.
You think of that way, right?
Right?
Yeah.
It's full of it. like when I was going through this period of severe constipation, you know, it lasted almost 4 or 5 weeks. I went to the doctor, and she took a picture of my entire inside, and this is exactly what she said: "You're full of shit."
You already knew that, right? You already knew that.
I knew that; otherwise, I wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
You know, I was miserable, and she said, "You're full of it." Because the whole thing was completely clogged. Anyway, so, but what the commentator says is that, look, your body is disgusting. Inside, everything inside you, just leave that few millimeters of skin, or even nanometers of skin. Beyond that, everything is disgusting.
Even the skin is crawling with bugs and everything.
And we just painted with all kinds of stuff and believe, you know, that we are very nice and clean and pure and beautiful. But it's all disgusting.
Could you also take it to mean, it's hard to even describe this. So when you achieve this consciousness that's way beyond the body and what we are as human, that soul, that Purusha character, that is so superior to the body. When we reach that state, we don't have any need for any of this.
Absolutely, that's exactly the point.
Once we realize that,
then you don't,
then you don't care.
Then you don't care, because then you have no attachment.
And everything becomes irrelevant.
Irrelevant, absolutely, you're right. Then you have gone past all attachment to the body. Absolutely.
But
you're right.
We need the body to achieve that. So
we need the body.
Care of it
we live in
order
the world.
To be the temple
but,
that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So for now we are that body. Or that is a part of us. Mm-hmm. We just haven't realized the higher consciousness.
So, anyway, so the first part is the swanga. Swanga means your own body. Jugupsa is dislike or aversion, as the term, as the translation says. And pareira sansargaha. And no desire for contact with anybody else, for the same reason. Because whatever looks beautiful, it's only on the surface. Everything else, the inside of everything is disgusting. Okay? So you develop that. But you have to get there, you have to become very pure, shaucha. Shaucha is cleanliness, purity, inside, outside. So you can read my notes on this. Let's read the next sutra also. This is a good one. Okay, so these are long, this is one word made up of many, many different words, okay? This is one long word. Okay, so let me break them into individual words. Sattva.
Sattva.
Shuddhi. Shruti. Saumanasya.
Saumanasya.
Ekagra.
Ekagra.
Indriya Jaya.
Indriya Jaya.
Atma Darshana Yogyatva. Atma Darshana. Yogyatvani cha. Okay, so this is how Sanskrit is made of, you know. They combine multiple words together and put into it one single word. So this becomes one word.
How do you know where the word breaks are?
That's the whole learning of Sanskrit.
That's the grammar part, yeah. Okay.
This is how you learn Sanskrit.
So is Sanskrit written, is everything just kind of written continuously like
top.
That?
Sometimes, it depends.
Depends.
There are rules to combine words into multiple words into single words. Mm-hmm. And then the rules to separate the words apart. Yeah.
It's terse.
Very crisp, yeah. Very terse. Okay. So, sattva shuddhi. Sattva is one of the three gunas. Sattva, rajas and?
Tamas.
Tamas, not tapas.
Right.
Tamas. Tapas is one of the...
Was the... The austerity,
yeah. Yeah. Sattva, rajas and tamas. You are familiar with these terms?
No.
Sattva, rajas and tamas?
Yeah, I read in my books.
Books, yeah. Okay. These are three, they are called the gunas. Gunas can be loosely translated as qualities of nature, you can call them. Okay. Sattva is purity. Rajas is action and mobility, and tamas is dullness, darkness, negativity, and all that bad stuff is tamas. Okay? So, sattva shuddhi. Shuddhi means purity. Shuddhi means purity. Sattva shuddhi means purity of the sattva guna. Okay? Saumanasya means saumanasya. Mana is mind. Manasya is... Saumanasya means, so when you add sau, it becomes good. So cheerfulness of the mind, pleasantness of the mind, good thoughts in the mind, that's saumanasya. Ekagra means one-pointedness. Ekagra means one-pointedness. Focus, that means totally concentration, total concentration and one-pointedness. That's ekagra. Indriya jaya. Indriya is all the five senses. And jaya means... victory over, or control over, or having a full control over your five senses. What did the translation say?
Same thing. Mastery over
yeah.
Victory.
Oh, I have taken it from the same book, actually. Yeah. These are all from the same Satchidananda. You're reading Satchidananda, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I will get this book.
Well, this book, you can get it online, Amazon. Amazon, this is... this book by Satchidananda is a good book to start with. But, like they say, you have to get started with this, but immediately you have to kind of transition this book, out of this book. It's a good book to start. Okay?
So, what's the one that you recommend for transitioning?
Bryant is a good one to transition to. Bryant. Edwin Bryant. Yeah, it's a good one. From here you can transition to that one.
Okay.
And from Bryant, the best text, next one will be Aranya.
So which is the one that you all do it in the study group?
That's the one. Do all these.
We
study all these one by one.
Oh, one by one? Okay.
I mean, we one sutra... He's a scientist. Scientific view.
This one is a PDF online. You can get this one.
Yeah, that's freely available online. And Satchidananda.
Maybe from here.
That one value.
Which class?
This class. Saturday class.
This
that
workshop.
We are doing here.
Once
a month class.
No, we don't. We only read the translation. There is no commentary that I read from here.
But at least this can be the base for this.
This can be the base. Yeah. You can use
the advanced class.
All these comments that I have, They are based on my study of at least 6 to 8 different commentaries, not just this book. This book is, like I said, very, very limited in its approach, very limited.
How do we transition to the next level after we kind of finish this?
And yeah, yeah, yeah.
Come to you for
yeah.
Well, you can get this, Brian.
I'll do from here.
No, whatever works for you.
Sanskrit studies as well, so too many things.
You study Sanskrit also?
Yeah, I've been doing some Sanskrit studies on and off. Yeah.
With Sanskrit Bharati or no?
Right now it's Sanskrit Bharati. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
That one got on Amazon.
There's Barbara Miller?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's... simple.
She's
the
one
who did
the translation of the Gita too.
Yeah,
she did a lot of Gita work.
Yes.
I've read the Gita, read Swami Satchidananda's. What would you recommend next? To read another one.
Gita is so different. There are so many authors.
Yeah, there are.
I
was just curious to read another.
Swami Chidbhavananda.
Chidbhavananda is one. Swami Chinmayananda is another. So many.
Chidbhavananda, by I mean, I don't know. I went to Ramakrishna Math school, and maybe at those days, like Chidbhavananda was the one that was very popular.
Yeah, very popular.
Well
right.
Written, and a lot of commentary.
Right.
A lot of interpretations, I would say. So I may be biased or inclined, but that's one of the.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Mm. So, what was that name? How do you spell that?
Chidbhavanand. C-H-I-D.
Uh-huh.
B-H-A-V. A-N-A-N-D-A. Ananda.
Chidbhavananda.
Yeah. Okay. There are many.
Yeah.
Yes.
Many commentaries. There is a very well-known commentary, but that's based on the purely Vedanta philosophy. It's by Swami Dayananda Saraswati. Very common.
Dayananda.
Yeah, Dayananda. But again, that's purely from the Vedantic philosophy point of view.
That's interesting.
Then there's one by Anubhavananda. Not Anubhavananda, sorry. What's his name? Okay, I forget the name. Yeah. And of course, there's one by Swami Shivananda. That was his guru, Satchidananda's guru. He also has a commentary. Yogananda, another commentary. So many.
Shankaracharya,
Ramanujacharya has a different perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but again, Shankaracharya commentary is pure Vedanta.
Yeah.
Okay.
We need, like, Patanjali's, Prabhyasa's commentary, we need someone like that. For Shankaracharya's commentary, we need someone else's commentary to understand.
Yes, absolutely, yes, yes, yes. And the final statement is very important. Atma darshana yogyatva. Atma darshana means self-realization. Atma darshana is self-realization. Yogyatva is the ability. So through the practice of purity, that shaucha, you eventually can attain the ability or the capacity to become self-realized. Atma darshana. So that's how powerful purity is. And remember, purity has to be at the physical level, mental level, emotional level, environmental level, everywhere, you know. So let me read my comments here. Let's see what I have written here. So the external cleanliness is through soap, water, etc., and taking pure foods, includes fasting, avoiding alcohol and putrid food. That's just, again, something that you think about. Having a shower every day, obviously, with some clean soap and water. That's the external cleanliness. Then, for internal cleanliness, there are six practices that Hatha Yoga tells us. Is everyone familiar with these?
Just the first one.
Hmm?
Just the first one, the Kapalabhati.
Kapalabhati, Neti, Basti, Dhauti, Kapalabhati, Trataka, and Nauli. These are the six practices which are mentioned in the Pradipika, Hatha Yoga Pradipika. That's the most commonly referenced text for Hatha Yoga practices. Okay? Now, very quickly, what's Neti?
That's the water through the sinuses.
Nasal cleansing. Yeah, nasal cleansing. Now, there are two techniques of nasal cleansing. The one mentioned in the Pradipika is the use of a thread, catheter or a thread. Yeah. It has to be very clean and pure. And then you have to, there are two techniques mentioned. One is to have a thread, you pour it through one nostril and then bring it out from the other nostril, and then you just massage the whole thing. Okay? And that's... I know.
A little austere.
Yeah. It's nasal flossing. Okay, that's one technique mentioned. The other is to have two pieces of string, and you pour one through one nostril, but bring it out through the mouth, and then do the cleaning on one side, and then do the other side on the other with the other thread. Okay, these days most commonly used is a catheter, is a thin catheter. And then you do that with that catheter. You have to lubricate it nicely, clean it nicely, lubricate it, and then put it through the mouth.
But Jalaneti is
more common. That's right. So because of all these faces that you guys are making.
All the Westerners in the room.
Okay. Because of all that, the most common practice is Jalaneti, which is the water cleansing, which is the use of a neti pot. Okay. Again, not a neti pot. I keep mentioning that because most people tend to pronounce it as a neti. Neti, that's not the word. That's not a Sanskrit word at all. Okay, neti pot. Okay, and that's the neti for nasal cleansing. And basti is enema. Basti is a yogic enema in which the recommendation is that you sit in a tub of lukewarm water, and then you have to train your anus muscles to suck the water in. Okay, and that will induce your bowel movement and you run to the toilet after that. It takes some practice and experience to do that. That's basti. Dhauti is internal cleansing again, your colon cleansing. And again, the technique that's mentioned in the text is to use a piece of cloth which is about 2 inches wide and several feet long, maybe 10, 12, 13 feet long. Okay, you have to wet that piece of cloth and sterilize it. And then swallow the whole thing. Okay, you saw that video, right? You remember that? Mm-hmm. Swami. He's swallowing almost like, how many? 13 feet of cloth?
Just keep swallowing.
Okay, and then I have seen a video of an ancient yogi, ancient in the sense from some Himalayan yogi who did the same thing. And he would swallow the whole thing. Grab onto one end of the piece of cloth, and then he will take it out, swallow it back, take it out, swallow it back, and do this about 5 or 6 times to really cleanse the whole thing out, and then throw the whole thing out. Okay? So that's the traditional form of dhauti mentioned in the text. But what is done most commonly right now is the water dhauti, which is the what's called the shankha prakshalana, in which you drink 5 to 6 glasses of water, Do a set of prescribed exercises, and then you go to the toilet. That's something I do every day. You know, that's the one which has eventually cured me from my constipation, which I've had since my childhood days. So that's been working out for me for the last 20 years now. And that's why I wake up very early, because I need that 1 hour to do all that practice. Okay, that's dhauti. Then Kapalabhati, everyone knows that. Okay, that's the breathing practice. Now it has become the breathing practice. It was not.
It was
a cleansing practice.
It was a cleansing. Okay.
In the Pradipika text, there are chapters, right? There's asana, pranayama, there's meditation, and there's cleansing. So Kapalbhati is not listed under pranayama, it's listed under cleansing. But now it is universally, it's practiced as pranayama. Okay? Kapalbhati. Trataka, same thing with Trataka. Trataka is the candle gazing. Okay? And again, it's listed under the cleansing practices, but now it has evolved to a very beautiful meditation practice of its own. So, or dharana practice, let's call it.
How is that a cleansing?
It's cleansing the eyes.
The eyes,
the nervous system, the nerves that go from the eyes, they say they become strong. All the muscles in the eyes, they become strong. It becomes, because you are supposed to gaze until your eyes begin to water, okay? So the lubrication of the eyes becomes very important. The dryness of the eyes goes away. A lot of things are associated with this. But nowadays, they have added so many more benefits to this practice. It's opening your third eye, So you do it for a long time, the third eye is opened and you become visionary and all that. There's a lot of benefits. It's a very powerful technique. And excellent practice to develop your dharana. Both dharana as well as pratyahara. Beautiful practice for that. Your mind becomes totally one-focused, one-pointed. And you can transition to your meditation very effectively after that.
Is there a description of candle gazing on your website?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. On my blog, yes.
Almost everything.
It's an encyclopedia.
It is. It's like I have a question and I go in and look. It's right there.
Well, it's evolved. This blog has evolved over the years, so.
Amazing how much you have
to. It's just evolved. Okay, that's Trataka. And what's Navli? Navli is abdominal churning.
Is that where you do the breathing? And
so you suck the belly in, then pull the central part out, and then you turn the muscles in a circle, clockwise and counterclockwise. You've never seen that?
No.
I can demonstrate it maybe sometime.
Is it through some yoga posture that you do?
It's a breathing technique. I can quickly show it to you.
That's fine. You can do some.
Yeah, we can demonstrate it. No, that's no problem. We can do it. It's basically controlling the muscles of the abdominal area and moving them in a certain manner. Okay, that's Navli. So those are the six cleansing practices, which are supposed to be very beautiful and cleansing in every way, internals. And then you have to clean the mind, internal cleansing through making the mind feel sattvic, pure by removing anger, pride, arrogance, jealousy, greed, and delusion. There are these six. These six, they are called the Shatripus, or six enemies of the mind. You probably know them.
Kama, Krodha,
right.
Lobha, Moha, Mada Matsarya.
Mada Matsarya, very good. Those are the six. Kama is?
Lust.
Lustful craving. Lust. Kama is lustful craving. Krodha is?
Anger.
Lobha?
Lobha is greed.
Moha?
Moha is desire?
Delusion.
Okay.
Delusion. Delusion based on attachment. Okay. Mother is?
Ego.
Ego, pride. False pride. Okay, mother. And Matsarya?
Jealousy.
So these are the six enemies. Okay, and they completely make your mind impure, basically. When you have any one of these or a combination of these, your mind is impure. That means it's not clean. Mind is not clean. And you have to get rid of all of these. So you're talking a lot here. Okay. And there is the Sutra 1.33 in the Yoga Sutras, which talks about these four attitudes Does anybody remember that? Maitri Karuna Mudito Pekshanam. 133. Bhavanataha Shitta Prasadanam. So what it says is that the mind can be purified. Chitta Prasadanam is mind can be purified. Chitta is the mind. By adopting these four attitudes for these four groups, four categories of people. Okay? So Sukha means people who are happy towards them. Maitri. Maitri is friendliness. You can read the whole sutra. You know. You want to read it loud?
Sure. By cultivating attitudes of friendliness toward the happy, compassion for the unhappy, delight in the virtuous, and disregard toward the wicked, the mind stuff retains its undisturbed calmness.
Very good. So that's the sutra. You know, we have a friend of ours in our study group. He has developed a whole presentation on this sutra. Just on this sutra. It's almost like an hour-long presentation. And I wrote a blog article on that. And then I have attached his presentation, audio presentation, as well as his PowerPoint presentation. Okay, it's a very scientifically prepared PowerPoint presentation. Very beautiful. Just on this sutra itself. Very beautiful. And you can get a lot of depth of understanding of this sutra and how it applies to our day-to-day life and our social environment. It's a very beautiful presentation. Ramani is his name. Okay, so you can, you know, if you are interested in going into depth of this sutra, you can get there. It's on my blog. Okay. Cleanliness of the environment, non-pollution, that's very important. We don't pay enough attention to it, but it's very, very important. And then the translation is from Shaucha comes disgust for one's own body and disinclination for contact with others. And from inner purity, you know, arise the purity of sattva. Sattva, as we said, is the guna, sattva, rajas and tamas, purity of sattva. And cheerfulness, one-pointedness, control of the senses, and fitness for vision of the self. Self-realization is possible. Atma-darshana, yogyatva. Yogyatva means that ability, yogyatva. Okay, everyone okay with cleanliness so far? Purity at all levels. Okay, so next one is on Santosha. Santosha is contentment. So let's read the Sanskrit. Santoshat.
Santoshat.
Anuttama.
Anuttama.
Sukhalabha.
Sukhalabha.
Santoshat.
Santoshat.
Anuttama sukhalabha.
Anuttama.
Very good. Yeah, you got it. Anuttama. Uttama means superior. Anuttama means absolutely superior.
Oh, I thought it would be not superior.
I know. It could mean both, but it means beyond superior. Uttama means superior. Anuttama means even beyond that. Anuttama, sukha. Sukha is all happiness. Labha, you gain the ultimate happiness by becoming contented. That's what it means. By being contented with what you have, you gain the ultimate sukham. Sukham is happiness or joy. Okay. You know, these commentators, they all have different translations of each sutra. And to give an idea for that, I have a blog post where I have given translations by at least 6 different authors on my blog. And you can read that and then you'll see how different they are for each sutra. And that's, you know, when I started reading, that was the motivation why I wanted to learn Sanskrit. Because I realized that, you know, by reading these translations, I'm not going to get the real essence of the meaning, because everyone will put their own 2 cents worth of salt into it, pepper into it, and not sure what I was getting. But now, you know, knowing these Sanskrit words, it really helps, because now I have the essence of what they mean in my own terms, in my own understanding. I don't have to depend on the words they use. It's very helpful. Okay, so the simple statements here, being contented with what we have, not desiring more than what we need. Again, the same thing, the greed, non-greed and contentment, they are kind of related, you know, very closely related. And there also we said you have to learn to distinguish between want and need. Okay? Need is something which is needed for survival. You need a cover over your head to sleep under, and you need a cover over your body to sleep in, some clothes, food, basic food. And you want the multi-million dollar house only because your neighbor has one. That's the want part. Okay, so to distinguish between want and need, that's very important to developing contentment. And then again, aspiration is okay. I always say that aspire for something higher than what you have, something, you know, desirable. But again, be contented with what you get as a result of your endeavors. That's the most important part. Never be discontented. Being contented in all situations, under all circumstances, not constantly complaining. No need to strive to be something or achieve something. We are perfect the way we are. And one established in santosha attains supreme happiness. That's the statement that we just read. Okay. One established in santosha attains sukh labha. Sukh is happiness, joy. Okay, so this is the tapas part, tapas. So the Sanskrit is kayendriya siddhihi ashuddhi kshayat tapasaha. Again, kayendriya siddhihi ashuddhi kshayat tapasaha. What does it mean? Kaya means the body. Okay. Indriya means the 5 senses. Now, again, the word siddhi is, you know, when you attain certain powers, that's called siddhi. You attain certain normal, super normal powers. So you can attain some super normal powers in both in your physical body as well as your 5 senses. You know, that's the meaning of this statement. Okay? And by practicing tapasa, you can attain some super normal powers related to your body and by and the five senses. How do you do that? Ashuddhi kshayat. Ashuddhi is all the impurities of the body. Kshayat means you diminish or you destroy the impurities of the body through tapas. And that way you can attain these supernormal powers in your physical body and your five senses. So that's the literal meaning of this phrase. So by practicing tapas, you diminish or you destroy all the ashuddhis. Ashuddhis are all the impurities of the body. And when you do that, you can develop siddhis. Siddhis of the body, kaya, as well as indriya. Indriya is the five senses. So, it's a very loaded statement here. Okay, so what is tapas? Laura, you want to read this loud?
Defined as resisting pairs of experiences like heat, cold, pain, pleasure, hunger, thirst, etc.
Now, these are from the commentators, you know, these are all different commentators, they will tell you all this.
Not getting upset over small sufferings, ability to sit and stand motionless, ability to hold silence, practice of asana, pranayama, help develop tapas. Tapas is needed to remove impurities caused by karma, afflictions, klesha, and propensities, vasanas. When established in tapas, mastery over body and senses is achieved.
That's a very mild mastery over body and mind, you know, it's a milder version of the translation because siddhi usually applies to more supernormal kind of attainments. That's the normal meaning of siddhi. He has mellowed it down, I think. I mean, that's just my interpretation. It's much more than just simply mastery over body and senses. Okay, so any questions on these, any terms that we have used here that are not clear?
It sounds like marching band. The way it's worded.
Marching band.
Marching band. You know when you're in marching band?
You have to practice
standing. Yeah, you teach it. If a bee sits on your nose, don't wipe it. If the judge walks in front of you, you march over him like he's not there. Stand motionless, hold silence.
Marching band, I see.
Like a very, very mild version of tapas.
Yeah.
Cold pain.
You know, people practice tapas. If you go to a place like Haridwar, there is a town in North India called Haridwar. It's a religious town in a sense. You know, lots of ashrams, lot of rishis and swamis, and everybody lives there. Okay, there the river Ganga flows there. Ganga, have you heard the river Ganga? Mm-hmm. Ganges, in sometimes called. So there, once you go there, you will see these people, you know, standing in water, and they will be standing like this with the eyes closed for hours.
Wow.
Eyes closed. You know, you try to do that for 5 seconds, you cannot do that with eyes closed.
Yeah.
Okay. But these guys, I've seen people literally standing there for, I was sitting there for, actually what happened was, you know, I was sitting there for meditation, but I was doing my course there. I did a course at Shivananda Ashram for 2 months in 2006. So every now and then I would go there and sit and meditate by the river, you know, the beautiful sound of the waves. It's very soothing. You sit on a piece of stone there and it's very soothing, you know, that whole atmosphere. So I was sitting in meditation, but my mind was on this guy standing like this, you know. So every, you know, I'll go into my mantra meditation and every few minutes I would open my eyes, you know, the guy's still there. I'm still there. But it was a good experience still, you know, despite all that.
Single point of attention.
Single point of attention, right. Guy, you know, I finished my meditation about half an hour, 45 minutes or whatever time I spent there. This guy was still there.
Wow.
I left.
And you still remember that.
made an impression.
Yeah, very clear. You know, these people do a lot of stuff.
So do you have to do a lot of yoga when you go to that Shivananda Ashrama, or it's just more of meditation?
No, that was philosophy course. That was course on yoga philosophy.
Yoga philosophy. So you had to do yoga? You had to do yoga posture?
Postures, what? That was just a side activity. The main theme was to understand yoga philosophy.
Okay.
So we studied Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, we studied Vedanta philosophy, we studied Sankhya philosophy, we studied Bhakti, philosophy of Bhakti, so, and Gita, a lot of Gita study. So different aspects of the Indian philosophy overall.
In 2 months, we cover a lot of ground.
I know, we covered a lot of ground. It was just kind of touching the surface of everything.
So yeah. Morning, like 4? Four?
No, we used to get up at 5, and then 5:30 to 6:30 was the first meditation class. Then we would 6:30 was an asana, practice a little bit, then breakfast, and then 4 lectures on different aspects. Then lunch. Then we used to do karma yoga. We used to clean bathrooms and all that. That everyone had to do that. Either do in the garden. Everyone was assigned something. Clean somebody else's room, clean the bathroom, clean the garden, you know, do whatever. Karma yoga. And then again, 3 to 5, another lecture. Then tea and another set of 2 hours asana session after that. On the roof.
No afternoon naps.
They would give us an hour for whatever you wanted to do after lunch. But a very packed program, though, very packed. And then exams, so you have to study real hard for that. Real hard. At the end of these 2 months, you know, last week was all exams.
Written exams.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was pretty intense. Yeah. So every now and then we go to the river and then take a bath there, or, you know, just watch these people doing sadhana and meditation. Very good. Good experience. Okay. Oh, these are the 8 siddhis. You know, these are the siddhis that are commonly mentioned, okay, in our texts. So when you talk of siddhi, these are the supernormal powers. They are mentioned in almost every text. You know, when you write the word siddhi, this is what you will come up with, 8 of them. So it's anima. Does anyone want to read the meanings? Or why don't you read the
anima, reducing one's body even to the size of an atom.
It comes from anu. Anu means atom. And the noun from that, you know, derived noun from that is anima, from anu.
Mahima, expanding one's body to an infinitely large size.
That's her name, Mahi.
I can become infinitely large.
Right.
Even
forward.
So Hanuman did that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He would do that, yes.
Garima, becoming infinitely heavy. Lalima, becoming almost weightless.
Again, these words come from the main words, guru. Garima is guru. Laghima is laghu. And anima is anu. So from those words, these are derived from those words. Yeah.
Prapti, having unrestricted access to all places.
You know, have you read the book by Yogananda?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was just thinking about that.
You know, there they show people being in multiple places at the same time.
Yeah. Which book?
Autobiography of a Yogi. Mm-hmm. Have you read that?
I'm actually reading it right now.
Yeah, so there you will see instances of this thing happening. You know, you can duplicate yourself and place yourself in multiple places.
Prakamya, realizing whatever one desires. Ishitva, possessing absolute lordship. Vashitva, power to subjugate all.
Anyway, so there are a lot of description about these available in multiple commentaries.